they are going to pass a bill that codifies abortion on demand up to the moment of birth, including as a form of birth control. And if they have the House and the Senate, that will be federal law.
Yes.
And he will sign it into law in a ceremony in the Rose Garden attended by 5,000 people cheering. That's what's going to happen if he's reelected and the Democrats have the Congress. When we execute this program, along with everything else that's going on, we estimate that on the national level, the full potentiality on the upside is as many as 7 to 8 million new evangelical and pro-life Catholic voters nationwide. And in these battleground states, somewhere between 50 to 150,000 new voters.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Sean Spicer Show. What is it going to take to win? That's the key question across these 7 or 8 battleground states, depending on how you count it. I've talked to you about how close some of these elections were over the last two cycles, 10,000, 20,000 votes. Well, Ralph Reed, the guy who led the Christian coalition effort in 1994, is back at it again in 2024. He's mobilizing and registering new evangelical voters to the tune of millions of people. That will be a critical difference in this election. We're going to talk to Ralph about this effort, what they're doing, how much they're spending, and how they're doing it. Before we get to that, I want to tell you about two amazing sponsors that help keep this show free across all platforms. If you'll be kind enough to subscribe, that would be the only thing I'd ask. So I want to tell you about two of them, and then we'll get into it with Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. All right, if you're up and about all day and you've got tired feet, I've got the solution for you. Gravity Defier shoes. They are the ultimate in comfort shoes. They support you when you're on the go. So if you're running errands, you're on the sideline with the kids at all their games, you're in meetings day in and day out, this is the answer you've been looking for. Every single pair of Gravity Defier shoes comes with custom orthotics. You know what I'm talking about if you've had feet issues or you're getting tired all day. Custom orthotics are the answers. And these shoes all have the Verso patented trampoline technology in them that adds a level of cushion in the heel right where you need it most. That's going to help absorb shock throughout the day to give you back some of that energy, right? And the shoes also will improve your posture. It helps with stress. It helps put the key muscle groups into action. We're talking your calves and other major muscle groups so that you're using the right muscles as you walk around. There are countless customer reviews that talk about the positive results of Gravity Defier shoes. The best part is right now, if you go to GDEFY.com and enter code SPICER30, go to GDEFY.com, enter the code SPICER30, you get $30 off your $150 order. You can go there right now, $30 off a $150 order if you go to GDEFY.com and enter code word SPICER30. All right, guys, when we lose power, whether it's because our power grid gets hit or a power line goes down or natural disaster strikes, whether it's a day or a week or a month, if you've been subject to this, you know what I'm talking about. You're trying to figure out how you're going to power your phone, your computer, your medical devices. I mean, your refrigerator, all that food. Well, I've got the answer for you because I have in my house a Patriot Power Generator 2000X. And if you go to fourpatriots.com/Spicer, you can have one too, right? This is the kind of thing that you want to get ahead of when an emergency hits. Whether it's you, your family, a neighbor, a loved one, you want to make sure that you can take them. And the Patriot Power Generator is completely portable. Now, you can look on the video that I've got up there. I've got it in my house. There are no fumes, no gas to fill it up with. It's got no noise. You bring it into your house. You can bring it wherever you go if you needed to bring it to a friend's house. And it's completely powered through solar panels. So you don't have to worry about going out and getting and refilling it with gas. You can bring it into the house and then power it up through the power of the sun with a solar panel that comes free with it. Get ahead of a crisis now. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer and get your Patriot Power Generator 2000X so you can be prepared like I am. Ralph, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
You bet, Sean. Good to be with you.
So I got to tell you, I read this headline and I I've been worried about Trump's money. He had that big event at Mar-a-Lago. The RNC is back on track. But it says Faith and Freedom, a conservative-leaning organization, intends to spend $62 million registering and turning out evangelical voters and texting and calling supporters and door-knocking. $10 million more than it spent 4 years ago. That's a massive amount. And it's actually, I think, so walk us through how you're going to spend this money. Do you have it in the bank? How's that going to affect the playing field in 2024?
Well, I wish I had it in the bank right now, Sean.
Are we looking for like a couple? We need to have a Mar-a-Lago event for
yeah. For you can go to ffcoalition.com if you want to help. But seriously, we've got about 1 million small donors. We've got a lot of very large and major donors. I'm confident we're going to be able to reach this goal. I'm hoping that we can exceed it. And just to be clear, Sean, because of the infrastructure that we have, you and I are both, kind of aging political hacks. So I know you know the business. You know, we have an infrastructure in 36 states with volunteers, Uber, kind of part-time staff, full-time staff. We'll have a total of 10,000 people on the ground in the battleground and swing states. Now, that includes Senate, House and presidential. Okay. And what that means when you boil it down is instead of this project being vendored out where you're like hiring outside firms to knock on the doors, these are our people. These are our volunteers that have been doing this for 15 years. About 5,000 will be paid. About 5,000 will be either part-time or full-time volunteers. We will hit 10 million doors in 21 states, and we will reach 18 million evangelical Christians and pro-life faithful Roman Catholics at the door. Sean, just to be clear, no organization outside the Republican Party has done that in your or my lifetime. It will be backed by 10 million get-out-the-vote calls. Those are not robocalls. These are volunteer calls. It's an app-based system. The same people that are getting door knocked are going to get phone calls. We'll focus on banking the vote and driving people to vote early. And then when we get down to the end, we'll be doing peer-to-peer text messages. And then we'll continue to do our traditional program, which is putting 30 million voter guides in about 113,000 churches. So it's multiple touches, phone, text, door, church. And we believe in this current macro political environment, Sean, that this is going to lead to the largest turnout of faithful pro-life Catholics and evangelical Christians in American history. We think they're going to come. We think they're going to come in big numbers. And we're privileged and honored to just be a small part of it.
Yeah. So what I love about what you're doing is you're doing the hard stuff, right? The knock I have so often against our party and our movement is that all the rich guys want to do the ads. They want to be able to say, I put that ad up, I did that. And that's great. And that's needed. That's part of the process. But the hard work is knocking on the doors. It's registering voters. It's identifying it. It's getting them out. There was a story the other day about the Dem side saying that they're averaging about $1,500 a new voter. That's what it was costing them to get a new person. And what people don't understand is that the RNC plays with what we call hard money. There are caps to how much you can give the RNC. Right. There's caps to how much you can give. If someone wants to write Faith and Freedom a $1 million check to help with this effort, they can do that. And they should. Right. But this is the work that needs to get done because we need to be finding more people that can vote with us, that identify with their issues. So when you talk to donors, do they buy into why you're doing this and how important it is?
Oh, yeah. They understand the importance of the ground game. And look, this is going to be this presidential election. And I'll just talk about the presidential race for a minute. You know, it's easy to forget this when you're living it, Sean, but no one alive in America today has ever seen anything like this. They've never seen a presidential candidate run against the person who succeeded them. That's never happened. You have to go back to Grover Cleveland in the 1880s. And at this point, both candidates, because they've both been president, of course, in the case of Trump, he's at this point, arguably the most famous person in the world. In the case of Biden, he's been in public office and in politics for over a half century. They're known quantities. There's not a huge number of undecided voters. These two candidates and their respective super PACs are going to spend $3 billion running for governor in four states. Literally.
It really is a glorified governor's race.
It really is. I mean, it's going to be Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and then, you know, pick 'em, Arizona, Georgia. Okay. And when you really think about how that's going to play out, Sean, what it means, back to your TV ad example, is total saturation of the airwaves, total saturation of every single digital impression that you could buy to an independent or persuadable voter in those three, four, five states. And that's where we come in. You know, we're not doing the air war. We're getting voters face to face. We're registering them in the churches. We're also tracking Christian and conservative voters that have moved into one of these states, because states like Arizona and Georgia in particular have seen a huge influx of new voters. There's almost 900,000 new voters on the Georgia voter file compared to 4 years ago.
900,000.
Yes, completely new voters. So we are modeling who among those are evangelical or pro-life Catholic. And then as people move into the state, Sean, and they either buy a home or they register a car, we can track them and we go chase them and get them registered. I'm telling you, when we execute this program, along with everything else that's going on, we estimate that on the national level, the full potentiality on the upside is as many as 7 to 8 million new evangelical and pro-life Catholic voters nationwide. And in these battleground states, somewhere between, it depends on the size of the state, but 50 to 150,000 new voters.
So the thing that
think about the margins in those states 4 years ago.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is if you think about 2016, it was, what, 70,000 votes over three states, 50,000 over three states in 2020. To your point, the numbers you're talking about far exceed the margins. I mean, what was Georgia? That's your state. Was it 20,000? Arizona?
11,700.
Roughly. Right. Pennsylvania was, I mean.
Yeah, it's kind of seared into my frontal lobe, Sean.
That's right. I was going to say, that's a number that's tattooed right there. I think that that's when people are thinking about this election, the numbers that you're talking about are so consequential in these battleground states that this is why what you're doing, when I say it is crucial to winning, that's not like some exaggeration or hyperbole. That is these in every one of these states, the margins that you're talking about far overwhelm either the margin in 2016 or 2020 and add a decisive win in our column.
Yeah. And, you know, if you really look at the number of volunteers that are deployed, if you look at the return on investment that we get from our paid staffers, which is far beyond what you would get if you hired some outside grassroots firm to do this work, we estimate the actual full value of this program is roughly 10x of what we're spending.
Yeah.
So in terms of metal on the target, if you were to actually put a price tag on everything we're doing, and some people are paying $6, $7, $8, $9 to knock on a door, you mentioned up to $1,500 to get a newly registered voter. You know, we're going to be spending dimes compared to that. So
the real value,
Sean, is close to $750 million in terms of what actually is going to happen.
Well, and the quality of the knock matters. So if I pay you $10 an hour to go knock on doors, you're like, knock, knock, knock. Hey, would you sign this form? If you are passionate about these issues, if you care about winning, if you care about advancing an agenda, if you care about the issues of that faith and freedom put forward, then when you knock on that door, you're going, hi, Mr. Reed, my name's Sean. I know you're new to the neighborhood. I hope you're enjoying living here in Georgia. I'd like to know if you'd have registered to vote. And if so, I mean, you have a much different disposition as a passionate volunteer that cares about the movement than a dude who's getting paid, you know, $14.50 an hour to knock on doors and just needs to go down a row.
Right. And that's correct. So there's an added value to that that you don't get any other way. Because our folks who are doing this work are people who are doing this out of a love for their country, and they're animated by faith in God and the values that derive from that faith. So, you know, nothing against President Trump at all. As you know, he's a dear friend of mine, and I have great affection for him, and I am extraordinarily grateful for the things that he did as president on judges, on support for Israel, on life, on advancing religious freedom, on the child tax credit. Too many things that I can name. But just to be clear, Sean, we're not doing this because of a particular candidate or because of a particular party. We're doing this because there are transcendent values like the sanctity of life and our ability to express our faith free from persecution and intimidation, the centrality of the traditional family, the need to strengthen the family. And by the way, at this critical moment, when we have an administration undermining Israel at every step, support for the state of Israel, we do this really as a service to the faithful. We're doing this as kind of a chamber of commerce for people of faith to maximize their voice, to make sure they turn out in huge numbers. And a lot of people, Sean, not you, you get it. But it's amazing the number of political professionals who don't understand that this is the largest and the most vibrant constituency in the electorate. Remember, just the white evangelicals alone are 29% of the electorate. If you add in the African American, Asian, and Hispanic evangelicals that we'll be contacting, it's roughly another 8% of the electorate. So now you're at 37%. If you add in the 11% of the electorate that are frequently attending faithful pro-life Roman Catholics, they're roughly 11% of the vote, 11 to 12%. Do the math. You're at 49% of all the voters. This is why we're doing this. It's the biggest constituency. It's larger than the union vote, the black vote, the gay vote, the progressive vote combined.
Well, that's the key thing, is that we have more than they have. But I want to get back to how you're doing this. So just to be clear, you're not targeting, or maybe you are. Just tell me, are you focused on the unregistered new folks who either you discovered haven't been registered, moved in some way, shape, or form to a state that's a battleground state, or are you just targeting people who are evangelical that may have not voted in the past but are registered, or both?
All of the above. So we're engaged in both an in-church voter registration effort in every key state. We're also tracking people who are moving so that we can chase them, whether they're going into one of the churches. So we're texting them and phoning them and getting them registered. So we estimate that there are roughly 9 million evangelicals who were unregistered in 2020. So, you know, we know we're not going to register all 9 million of them, but in these battleground states, we think we can reach hundreds of thousands of them. That'll be a game changer. Then, in addition to that, of the roughly, Sean, and I'm giving you the national number here, okay? Of the roughly 41.6 million modeled evangelical and pro-life voters that we're tracking nationally, about 15 million of those are low propensity voters.
That means, yeah.
Huh?
Meaning what? Like, explain what that
means. Meaning they've probably voted in only one of the last four elections.
Right.
And so when, just to be clear, when I mentioned the 10 million home visits before, that doesn't mean we're necessarily visiting 10 million unique homes, because we're going to go to the low propensity voters two, three, in some cases, as many as four times. We'll go to a door, knock on it. This is somebody who's not a high propensity voter. They're a casual voter. And we'll give them a voter guide comparing the candidates. We'll encourage them to vote early. If they have not gone and voted early within five business days, we go back. And when we go back the second time, the script for the volunteer or the paid staffer is, you know, look, I'm really sorry I'm back already, but I'm just doing my job. Yeah. And you just need to understand that if you don't go ahead and vote, I have to come back again in 3 days.
But see, this is, I tell the audience this all the time. If you bank your vote, you're saving money from organizations like yours, because they're going to have to go back. They're going to call you again. They're going to text you. I get people's concerns. I understand them. But ultimately, we've got to overwhelm the vote. And when you go cast your vote early, and if you want to cast it early, that's great. If you want to cast, I mean, in person, that's great. If you want to mail it in. But people have to understand that what you just said is so critical. That person will come back over and over again, and they could be spending those resources on somebody else who's a low propensity 100%. Voter, if not 100%. For that person.
Our goal, Sean, and this was long before 2020. And all the controversy and Sturm und Drang about, mail-in ballots and, people, every registered voter in a state being sent a mail-in ballot and things of that nature, all the abuses that we saw go on. Our goal has historically and always been to get 50% or more of all the evangelical and pro-life Catholic voters to vote before Election Day. Now, why is that? Because to your point, if I can get you to vote 14 days, 21 days before the election, you know what? You drop out of my turnout universe. I don't need to call you. I don't need to mail you. I don't need to text you. I can take those precious resources and finite resources, and I can redirect them to other people. So we want as many people to vote early as possible for that reason. And the other reason why is because, candidly, even though people don't intend for this to happen, more of our people are in the workforce. More of our people own their own businesses. You have last minute business trips that come up. You have illnesses or deaths in family. You know, Sean, when I worked on the Bush campaign in 2000, and I can't believe that was 24 years ago.
You look great.
We estimate that there were 2 million Bush voters who didn't vote on Election Day because they were on an airplane or out of state. And we won by 537 votes out of 106 million. So because of that, to avoid that problem of something coming up and somebody not being able to vote on Election Day, get the vote banked, vote early.
So of the battleground states, Pennsylvania, yeah. Georgia, Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, Nevada, New Hampshire, North Carolina. What state would you rank as the highest with the greatest potential of new evangelical and religious folks that you feel the highest potential in?
You know, probably Georgia, because it has, roughly 34% of the vote is evangelical. And in 2022, when Brian Kemp ran for re-election as governor, if you can believe it, he got 91% of that vote.
Wow.
The highest share of the evangelical vote ever won in a state since exit polling began 42 years ago. So there's huge potential there. You know, I mentioned the 750 to 800,000 new voters. If you did the math, that means that roughly 250,000 of those are going to be evangelicals if we can get them to the polls. I would say after that, Pennsylvania's voter file has actually shrunk by a little bit, I think roughly 1%. I think the greatest potential after that would probably be, it would be a jump ball between Wisconsin and Arizona. Arizona's had a little bit of a miniature Florida happen, of people fleeing California and other states and coming to Arizona. We estimate there are roughly 100,000 new evangelical voters. It's also a rare state, frankly, where Republicans have a voter reg advantage. So we, again, we feel good about our program. We're going to get our job done. And when we do, I promise you, combined with the macro political environment and the debacle and disaster that is the Biden administration, we're going to see the biggest turnout of voters of faith than we've ever seen in American politics. They know it. We know it. I think it's one of the reasons why, they're trying to smear us as Christian nationalists and things like that, because they know we're coming.
Well, it's funny. I was watching this interview, a couple of weeks now, maybe, with the cardinal that represents the Archdiocese of D.C., and he referred to Joe Biden as a cafeteria
Gregory or something like that. Great guy. Used to be, by the way, in Atlanta.
Yeah, and he referred to Joe Biden as a cafeteria Catholic. And, you know, for those of us Catholics, you know, those are the kind of people that pick and choose which part of the faith that they agree to, right? And he was very specific that Joe Biden obviously doesn't stand up for life. It's funny, though, I documented this in one of the books that I wrote, where Biden was a pro-life guy for a while. And he was very clear that Roe wasn't decided rightly until his party went nuts. And now he sort of acts like he's been this champion of abortion. How much is that figure into the conversations, the voter guys, the texting as an issue?
I think it's huge. Among evangelicals, I think it's rivaled by Israel, frankly, particularly at this moment of existential crisis for Israel. I mean, we basically have an undeclared war going on right now between Western civilization and democracies that respect human rights and Iran, the leading state sponsor of terrorism in the world. So it doesn't matter if it's Hamas in Gaza or Hezbollah in Lebanon or Islamic Jihad in Syria or the Houthis in Yemen, who are firing missiles throughout the Red Sea. Doesn't really matter. It's all Iran. That war is going on right now. And in that war, Joe Biden is undermining the state of Israel, which means he's undermining our security interests. So I think the life issue and the Israel issue among the evangelicals are going to be the twin turbo rockets. I think among Roman Catholics, I think not just the fact that Joe Biden is picking and choosing which among the social teaching of his church he chooses to respect and abide by. It isn't just that, although that's big. It's the radicalism and the extremism. I mean, think about it, Sean. He's the first elected Roman Catholic president since John F. Kennedy. He's only the second one in American history. And he is literally running for president as the central theme of his campaign. It is the central theme. He is going to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law and have a taxpayer-funded entitlement for elective abortion under Medicaid for the first time in American history. No one has run for president on that extremist of a position, not only since Roe, but in the history of our country. And I think Catholics are not going to go along with it.
Hey, animal lovers, if you've been watching this show for a while, you know about my friend Leo Grillo and all the amazing work that he does to give animals, horses, cats, dogs, a lifelong sanctuary, not a shelter, not a place where they're going to get sent away, a sanctuary for life, a no-kill sanctuary. That has been the mission of Leo Grillo, who started with just one dog, a Doberman, and realized the amazing, great work that he could do to give animals the nutrition, the veterinary care that they need by founding Delta Rescue. And I've said this before, go to deltarescue.org. Just check out the videos and the amazing work that they're doing. Now, Leo has been able to do so much of this on his own, but it's through contributions like the ones from you and I, $5, $50, $100, $1,000, that allow the work of Delta Rescue to continue. But if you can do more than that, if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate, that's going to be critical to make this an enduring mission and to make sure that these dogs, cats, horses always have a lifelong no-kill sanctuary. Please go to deltarescue.org and check out the work that they're doing and see what you can do to support it. As a lifelong Catholic, I always feel like when the priest gets up and starts talking about it, and that's very rare in the Catholic Church, the ones that have the guts to stand up and talk about how important it is to vote your faith, everyone gets squeamy. And a lot of the folks say, I wish I'm personally pro-life, but I don't believe this. But Biden, the thing that I find so interesting that I mentioned to you is for most of his career, he was at least, he didn't vote pro-life, but he would stand up for life. And then he completely flip-flopped on the issue, acting like somehow he's got the moral authority. Same with Nancy Pelosi. They love to go around and talk about their devout Catholic faith when they don't abide by the church's teaching. And I'm actually more disappointed in the church in many cases for not standing up and saying, hey, you're not, you don't, you know, you can be Catholic, but you're not exactly a model citizen when it comes to the Catholic faith and living up to it and espousing the tenets. The church was clear for decades about how we were supposed to vote. And they've let these guys off the hook, both Pelosi and Biden, for reasons that are well beyond my pay grade.
Yeah. And that's why I think Archbishop Gregory's comment generated so much attention, because it wasn't a political statement. He was simply talking about the importance of being a faithful Catholic,
right,
and being faithful to the social teaching of your church. And of course, Joe Biden does not want to go there. You know, keep in mind, this is a guy who, if you go back and look at the tape in 2012, he flat out lied in the debate with Paul Ryan about whether or not Obamacare allowed for the taxpayer funding of abortion. You remember the Catholic Hospital Association,
yeah,
was objecting to the taxpayers' taxpayer funding being used to encourage and promote abortion. And Biden just lied and said it wasn't the case. He supported the Hyde Amendment, which has prohibited the use of Medicaid funds to pay for elective abortions since 1978. It has been the law of this country under every president since Jimmy Carter of both parties. He voted for that. He supported it for 42 years. And then when he ran for president in 2020, you know, he kind of outsourced his convictions to the progressive wing of his party. He caved. And now he's basically taking a position that is to the left of what Obama ran on. It's to the left of most Democrats. If you look at the polling, Sean, a plurality of Democrats is opposed to taxpayer-funded abortion, and they oppose abortion after the first trimester.
Yeah.
He's advocating, codified into federal law, paid for with tax dollars, abortion for any reason or no reason, including as a form of birth control, up to birth. That's his position.
So Ralph, let me ask you this, because I agree with everything you're saying, but for yeah. some reason there, you said this, they're all in, right? So Florida, they yeah. added it to the ballot. They think Ohio, they got successes with that constitutional right. change they made. If the Democrats clearly believe, and I've got to believe that with all the money they have, that there's some data to support this, that somehow this is the only thing that they have and they went in all in on it, or they do believe it's a winning issue. Why?
Reason why is because if you go out and you do the polling and you say candidate A wants to ban abortion and candidate B doesn't, it tests very well. So they go out and they have a huge spending advantage. They just go up on TV and pummel our candidates, saying that so-and-so is in favor of banning abortion. Now, they don't get into the details that it might be after 6 weeks, once you can detect a heartbeat in a child, or it might be 12 or 15 weeks. It depends upon the state. It depends upon the candidate. And what we've learned, Sean, is very simply, instead of our candidates, consultants, and strategists trying to ignore this issue and just run on border in the economy and just try and ignore this, you can't ignore it. When somebody spends $1 million on TV and says you're in favor of banning abortion, you got to hit back. And not only that, but you got to get off defense and get on offense and explain what they're for.
Yes.
Is abortion up to the moment of birth paid for with tax dollars? Look, leave the abortion issue aside. Any issue, if you are not on offense, you're on defense. If you're not attacking your opponent, you're being attacked. And if you're explaining, you're losing. We've been explaining for 2 years. We need to quit explaining and start hitting them. If you do the polling, the things that most of our candidates are for, a majority of voters are for that. Whether it's after 6 weeks or 12 weeks or 15 weeks or whatever it is, they're certainly not for taxpayer-funded abortion. But what the Democrats for, if you poll that, like 12% of the voters are for it. So why are we the ones getting attacked? We ought to be attacking them. That's the short answer.
Look, amen. And not only that, I've said this over and over again. WTOP in Northern Virginia, D.C. area, yeah. Governor Ralph Northam, a doctor, the former governor of Virginia, is on tape.
The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
This isn't a hypothetical. He literally says we wait for the baby to be born, then we make a decision. That is the position of the Democratic Party. We have it on tape. We should make them own it and deny it. I mean, no Democrat gets asked, where is that line on abortion yeah. that you're comfortable with? I am so glad to hear you say this. Like, if we're not on offense, then we're in a corner in the fetal position, and too many Republicans want to weasel around and just be like, really? You want to know what's extreme? Your position, because da-da-da-da-da, whereas my position is actually in line with the majority of America.
Memo to Republican candidates at every level of government, okay? They're going to spend billions attacking you, billions in the next 7 months as being in favor of banning abortion, okay? Including, they argue, and they lie about this, certain miscarriages. So you're not going to be able to run. You're not going to be able to hide. So get out of your foxhole and start fighting back. They're the extremists. They're the radicals. They're way out of the mainstream of where the American people are. And let's get back on offense and start winning on this issue again.
Thank God. Oh, God. Let me put a pin in this because I want to get back to your effort in a second. For those Republicans, I think everything that you just said needs to get bottled and sent to all of them. Go on offense, talk about their position. There are some that want to talk about, we should come out and affirmatively take a 15 or 16 week ban and support that. One, I'm like, it's never going to pass. There's not 60 votes in the Senate. So why are we creating a problem that we don't have? Do you have any advice for candidates who want to talk about a federal ban or not?
You know, I think, first of all, I support... You know, I support a federal legislation that would create a national standard at 15 weeks. My organization, Faith and Freedom, strongly supports that. Frankly, we would support a federal heartbeat standard. So I think candidates have got to come down where they're comfortable, consistent with their principles and values. Some will come out for federal legislation at some level. Others will say, leave it to the states. But I think if you're going to say that you're for federal legislation, I think you have to be honest with the voters and say the thing that in the current composition of Congress, and Congress the way it's likely to be composed for the foreseeable future, probably the most likely thing that we can advance to protect life is going to be a comprehensive ban on the use of taxpayer funds,
yeah.
government funds to perform and promote abortion, including ending all federal funding of Planned Parenthood. I would make that the centerpiece. And then I would say, look, I'm pro-life. And if a pro-life bill comes to the floor of the House, or if I'm running for the Senate, you know, I've got to see the details, but it would protect unborn life. I'd be likely to vote for it. But the reality is, you couldn't even pass that bill. You couldn't, Sean, pass a 20-week ban in a Republican-held House today. So I think you ought to say that's unlikely to happen in the short term. But what I don't want to happen is what my opponent wants. He has said, and Joe Biden has promised, Sean, we've got it on tape. He has promised that if he is reelected, they are going to get rid of the filibuster in the Senate, and they are going to pass a bill that codifies abortion on demand up to the moment of birth, including as a form of birth control. And if they have the House and the Senate, that will be federal law.
Yes.
And he will sign it into law in a ceremony in the Rose Garden attended by 5,000 people cheering.
Republicans have signed on to a bill that would ban abortion nationwide. But if you give me two more Democratic senators in the United States Senate, I promise you, we're going to codify Roe.
Now, that's what's going to happen if he's reelected and the Democrats have the Congress. That's what we're against.
And that's the tip of the iceberg. DC becomes a state. The court becomes packed. I mean, yeah. I don't want to get into a bad mood today. I want to ask you, I want to go back to the data thing for a second, because something that you said, I wanted to get back to. When you guys enrich the voter file, when you find this person that says, I'm an evangelical voter, I care about this, I'm unregistered, I want to register, do you guys share that data with other groups? How does that work in the ecosystem on the right?
That's a great question. We partner with a lot of data partners, both for-profit and nonprofit. We track about 147 different data points on voters, you know, and we work with lots of different data scientists and data strategists. You know, we're very innovative. We work with a lot of different people, and we collaborate with other organizations on this. But our primary data partner is Data Trust, which is the for-profit repository of most of the Republican voter data. Every voter interaction that we've had at the door or on the phone, Sean, every single one for 15 years, every issue burden we've picked up, every pro-life voter we've identified, every candidate preference they've indicated is all in Data Trust, and has enabled their data team to further refine and perfect these algorithms. And any organization, I don't want to say any organization, they have to be, you know, in some way approved, but that's where we recommend. Nothing against other places. There are lots of other data sets out there, you know, not an infinite number, but many that are good. But we think that's the best single place for outside organizations like ours that are conservative or pro-life to be working.
I'm glad you said that. I 100% endorse that. I think that having enriched data that continues to build and gets better. You guys do a data point, you added, another person adds a data point, you get a much more holistic view of every voter that can then benefit everyone up the ticket. Ralph, in 94, you were at the forefront, the tip of the spear, leading the Christian Coalition. That was, I mean, there's no question about it. You were clearly a key person and organization that brought Republicans into the majority. And I know that you guys are nonpartisan technically, but you got people mobilized who cared about issues that ultimately benefited. So I don't want to get in trouble with the IRS. What has changed since then to now in terms of the tactics, the issues that you have noticed since that very successful cycle in 1994 that you are now using to benefit you in 2024?
Well, you're dating me now, Sean.
No, I was there too. You know, I was just a humble volunteer, but
yeah, I used to be the youngest guy in every meeting, you know, back in that time. And now I'm the oldest guy in every meeting, but that's okay. You know, it's really funny because it's kind of a tale of two cities in this sense. Number one, it's like the difference between driving a Model T Ford and driving a Ferrari. Let me give you an example. Back then, at the peak of the Christian Coalition, 94, 5, 6, okay? Our voter file, our pre-qualified evangelical voter file in my home state of Georgia was 80,000 households. Today, it's 650,000 households. And it's over 1 million voters. In Florida, it's over 4 million voters. In Pennsylvania, it's 800,000 voters that we've identified as voters of faith who are socially conservative. And the reasons for that, we've already been talking about. It began with micro-targeting. In the 2000 period is the first time I became aware of micro-targeting. And it's continued to advance as big data and data science has allowed us to use consumer data as well as publicly available data to identify our vote. Okay. Let me tell you what has not changed. What has not changed, even with the rise of the internet, even with the rise of multi-billion dollar campaigns, and even with the rise of the most advanced data science that the world has ever seen, there's one thing that has not changed. And that is what makes a difference in an election is the same thing that you did in 94. It's the same thing you did in 1904. It's the same thing you did in 1844, which is you get a list of all the voters. You identify the ones that are yours. Okay, you may be doing a different technology now to do that, but you identify your vote. And then you know what you do? You contact every single one of them face to face at their door, and you get them to the polls. And if they haven't voted by election day, you go to their house, you pick them up, and you give them a ride. We find in our after action analysis, when we, because we do all kinds of beta testing, mm-hmm. we try different stuff with different samples of voters. The one thing, Sean, and at Faith and Freedom, we've now been at this for 15 years, and we've knocked on literally tens of millions of doors. The one thing that moves the needle isn't an email, it isn't a text message, it isn't a digital ad, it isn't a video on Facebook. You know what it is? It's somebody showing up at your door, yep. Preferably from your neighborhood, preferably somebody you know.
Yep.
That increases turnout among those voters, depending upon the election, 7 to 11%.
That's amazing.
So everything we do with big data and with big money and with new technology is all designed to get us back to that face-to-face interaction.
Fantastic. Ralph Reed, thank you for all you're doing and also sharing that with us so we understand what's at stake. I appreciate you being with us. The link to Ralph's organization is in the description. If you can help out, please do. It costs a lot of money to do the work that he's doing. Please continue to subscribe to the show. You can find us on YouTube, Rumble, obviously the first every night, 7 o'clock on channel 347, Apple, Spotify, etc. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.